Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. Stay ahead of all the big games in the best league in the world, the Premier League. With the latest odds, form guides, expert opinions and more, the fans are the players at Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus begambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
Hello and welcome to Premier League All Access with me, Sam Matterface. Yes, I'm back, and alongside me, the trusty duo of TalkSport's chief football correspondent, Alex Crook, and England's favourite FA Cup winning left back, it's Scott Minto. This is what's coming up on the show.
Ten Hag must be, after what happened at Brentford as well, where they were shocking and yet looked like they were going to win the game, concede late on there. To concede two goals is not good enough.
Don't dive in, Casemiro. Don't jog back, Casemiro. Don't dive in, Harry Maguire. I give up with this team. They are so lacking of a football brain.
I'm sure all Liverpool fans should be thanking McAllister's dad for producing him, because he's an incredible talent, an incredible player.
I feel for Everton because ultimately they overspent when they were trying to be too ambitious under the likes of Ronald Koeman and Carlo Ancelotti. They're committed to building what looks like a fantastic new stadium, but at what cost?
Hello, gentlemen. Nice to be back. Let's have a quick look back at what we saw over the last week. Chaos at Stamford Bridge, a big boost for Arsenal, Manchester City and Liverpool strolling to victories. Chaos at the game that you were at, Scott. Come on, talk to me about it. What was it like those last few minutes? Manchester United looked like they were going to win the game. They'd come back from 2-0 down, and then all of a sudden, Chelsea win it. How?
Yeah. Do you know what? There's been some incredible games this season. And I was at Bournemouth-Luton, and that was incredibly enough. But that, I don't know, it's just two big giants wanting to be where they used to be, showing why they're a million miles from where they used to be, just making the ingredients of an incredible game. And I kind of feel sorry for United, I do, because they were 2-0 down, and they came back to 3-2. I think once 2-1 went in, you know, the bad pass from Caicedo, fair play to them. They showed a lot of character. And actually, the game management in the last 20 minutes was very good. But it was just end-to-end, lots of attempts. There must have been close to 50 attempts in total. And the end of it was just madness. We were saying about how what a wonderful game it was. But it's kind of just going to end at 3-2. And yet, when the board went up with 8 minutes, I actually said, and I joked to Joe Shannon, who was alongside me, I said, Joe, we've got time for a couple of goals here. I didn't actually believe there'd be another one. 3-2 was already sort of a good game enough. It was just a mental ending. It really was. And Ten Hag must be, after what happened at Brentford as well, where they were shocking and yet looked like they were going to win the game, concede late on there. To concede two goals is not good enough. But I think we saw why these two teams are far away from the very, very top.
Absolutely. And we'll get on to Manchester United in more detail when we talk about the Liverpool game in just a second. And Crook can then vent his anger or whatever else he's going to do, or whether he's just given up now. I don't know. Last night he said to me that he thought that he doesn't really care where we finish now. As long as if we finish 16th, I don't care. I'm not interested. As long as we don't go down. So he was in a bit of a mood. The bad news, of course, is that if Chelsea now win their game in hand, the likelihood is that they're going to catch Manchester United, which is what he's panicking about, because he's got to squeeze into my medium Chelsea shirt the last podcast of the season if Chelsea go above them. There you go. Anyway, talk to me about the Premier League, because so many times this season, and you mentioned Bournemouth versus Luton, when I was talking to Mickey Gray on the way out of the stadium last night, we didn't mention that game, but you know, the 4-1 Chelsea Tottenham, the 4-4 Chelsea Manchester City, 4-3 Manchester United-Liverpool game, this one last night. It's goal crazy. We're going to have a record number of goals in the Premier League this season. Is the Premier League absolutely brilliant to watch? It is. It's entertainment galore. Or is the defending crap, Crook?
Well, I think defending is optional. That was Alvin Martin's phrase, I think, in a game that we covered recently. In fact, it might have been Perry Groves, actually, talking about Tottenham last week, because obviously they concede a lot of goals as well. So I think, yeah, defences have become quite porous. I think the added time has played a part as well. And I don't want to sound like I've got sour grapes, but I'm not sure where 8 minutes came from at Stamford Bridge, because it was such a...
It does sound a lot like sour grapes.
It was such an end-to-end game. There was barely a stoppage in play in that second half. So apart from the changes off the bench, I don't see where 8 minutes came from. But I do think that's made a difference as well. And you're a stat man. How many of those goals on this record-breaking run that we're in for have come beyond the 90th minute? Because there do seem to be a lot of late goals in the Premier League this season as well.
Yes, and Liverpool actually score a lot of late goals. So many of them, over a third of their goals come in 76 minutes or onwards, which I think is a testament to the fitness of those players. And actually, speaking to Chris Wilder last night, he said to me, one of his big problems with his team is that they can't keep going till deep in games. They keep throwing away leads right at the end because he said they're not fit enough. They haven't got the legs. He said, we have to keep making substitutions because people are getting tired, which seems a bit strange. Obviously, it's something that he wants to rectify going forward. More reflections on the rest of the midweek games to come. But for now, let's switch our focus to this weekend's big action, starting in the title race. Can the leaders get their revenge for their FA Cup defeat at Old Trafford?
What an epic battle we have unfolding for the right to be called the Premier League champions.
It's Liverpool 2, Brighton 1. Anfield has erupted as Mo Salah finally finds the back of the net.
If we all together enjoy this, we have a chance. If we don't, we still have a chance. It's just really much more difficult.
Fascinatingly poised the title race. It finished Manchester City 0, Arsenal 0.
I think it's 3 years since this team hasn't scored at home. That tells you the difficulty of it and what the boys have done today. And we still want to be better and disappointed with certain situations. So that tells you how much the team wants.
We have to win all games. So wait, the other ones lose. So we are third, so... We could not do it, but we perform the way we are.
It's Liverpool's to lose now. It really, really is.
McAllister wrapped his right foot around the ball.
As the race for the title gets tighter and tighter.
We are still there. We are kind of the annoying guy we cannot get rid of.
Into Odegaard, there's the goal. It was coming.
To be around April, May, up there.
Phil Foden with a fine equaliser for Manchester City.
We find that we have one more month to play for the title. I'm not defining anything.
What a climax to this championship challenge we're in for on TalkSport.
Sunday session comes live from Manchester United's Old Trafford. They take on Liverpool. The game kicks off at 3:30. Yes, that's 3:30. It's all changed on Sunday, right? Because it's to do with a half marathon in Sheffield, which has moved Sheffield United's game with Chelsea to 5:30, which was due to kick off earlier in the day. There were rail strikes planned in London on Monday night. They've now been cancelled. So they moved Tottenham against Forest to 6 p.m. on Sunday. Why did you do that? Why would you do that? Why? Why? No one wants to go to Tottenham Hotspur the best of times on the tube because you can't even get there on the tube. So why the tube strikes matter, I don't know. But anyway, they're not even happening now. They've moved it to 6 o'clock on Sunday. So listen, by the way, if you're going to Tottenham Hotspur, please use the overground to White Hart Lane. It's a lot easier than the Seven Sisters. Crookie showed me it. He took me on a little magical mystery tour the other week. It's so much easier. Don't use the tube. Just go on the overground. So it's all changed on Sunday. Sunday's a little bit of a mess. But it does mean that we get a 3:30 start. And Crookie, you must be very much looking forward to a rerun of what was a dramatic game a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, I'm starting to think that I picked the wrong one to miss, obviously having turned down your offer of a ticket for that game. But I'm being paid to be there on Sunday, so there is no way out. And listen, if Manchester United make the same mistakes out of possession as they did at Stamford Bridge in midweek and at Brentford last weekend, then there's only one outcome. It will be a revenge mission for Liverpool. And that revenge, I'd imagine, will be dished out quite painfully for the home fans. Gary Neville said it, actually, after the Brentford game, out of possession. Manchester United are the worst team in the league. The lack of discipline when they haven't got the ball is incredible and epitomised by the Chelsea winning goal last night. You give away what I think was a poor penalty from Dallow. He got the wrong side of his man. People are saying minimal contact. Maybe it was a dive. I think Dallow deserved to give away a penalty. If you get caught that badly out of possession, you're always struggling to atone. So I think it was the right call. You lick your wounds. You think we should have won this game. It's 3-3. Let's just take the point. It's not a terrible point away from home. Where are they going? 9 players are ahead of the ball. And then Chelsea turn over possession. And obviously it leads to the corner. Nobody picks up Cole Palmer. I was watching it with my boys last night, which I don't get the opportunity to do too often. But obviously it's Easter holidays at the moment. And I was literally pointing out to them, because they're learning the game at the moment, the mistakes that Manchester United players were making throughout the 90 minutes. Don't do that. Don't dive in, Casemiro. Don't jog back, Casemiro. Don't dive in, Harry Maguire. Don't get caught the wrong side of the ball. Garnacho had a wonderful game, in fairness. Don't dawdle, Marcus Rashford. Honestly, I give up with this team. They are so lacking of a football brain. And Liverpool will just pick them off. This is going to be painful at Old Trafford on Sunday. Absolutely no doubt about that.
Wait, I can never work out what mood he's going to be in, Scott, when we're talking about Manchester United. He did send another message last night which said, "Our future is bright, I tell you." So I think he's got a little bit of optimism in there. I think that's mainly to do with Garnacho, maybe Kobbie Mainoo as well, those younger players that obviously are emerging. Erik ten Hag feels like that as well. And when we spoke to him after the game, we asked him how they managed to lose that match.
Decision-making is intelligence.
But it seemed the game management was okay up to literally the added-on period of time. It seemed like you were managing the game.
We were managing the game because from organisation, in the defending, there was no problem. But the decision-making by the goal against, stay on your feet, keep him bite, because there was inside, there was covering. And by the second, the nearest has to come out quicker.
Well, one of the things that Crook has already pointed out is that the indiscipline without the ball. And if you watch Liverpool's game against Sheffield United on Thursday night, one of the things that Sheffield United did really well was contain Liverpool by clogging up that middle of the pitch. They played a flat back five, then three in midfield. They made it very, very difficult for Liverpool to break them down. They had a lot of possession, Liverpool, and a lot of long-range attempts, a lot of attempts on goal, but a lot of them were half-hearted attempts. There weren't any clear-cut chances, not many clear-cut chances. Can Manchester United do that? Can Manchester United keep Liverpool at bay? Scott?
Well, I personally think, if you go back to that game in the Cup, Liverpool were in full control in the second half and had opportunities to really kill United off. It sounds ridiculous to say, because Crookie's right. You know, it was chaotic last night from both sides. The reason why United won that game was because they were able to, I don't know if it's such a verb, but out-chaotic Liverpool. You know, they managed towards the end of the game and extra time to make it so crazy that you just didn't know which way it was going to go. Now, I cannot imagine Liverpool would be that vulnerable again. I cannot imagine that Liverpool would be that naive again. And as a player, I would absolutely be having it in my head that you've stopped me getting the quadruple and I need to try even harder to make sure that we win this game. So I definitely think there's revenge even though Klopp probably won't admit it, in Liverpool's eyes. Can they stop them? I don't think they can. I think they'll try and do what they kind of try to do to Manchester City. They'll make it as tight as possible. They'll watch that game, Sheffield United, how they made it difficult. And, you know, there are some games, despite them being Manchester United, where you say, OK, we have to defend and we have to be very, very compact. But I just think Liverpool find a way to win. And when it comes to the league right now as well, with it being Klopp's last season, and yes, it's not at Anfield, but it is at Old Trafford, I still feel that they will create enough chances to win this game and they will be better. So they'll try and make it as compact as possible. Maybe they'll try and make it as chaotic as possible to make it a better chance of winning. But I don't see them winning, and I can see Liverpool winning by a couple of goals here.
Alexis McAllister scored an absolute rocket for Liverpool in midweek. He has been superb for them. How important will he be in this game? And are you surprised, Corey? You saw him a lot down at Brighton. Are you surprised by how seamlessly he's fitted in?
No, not really, because I thought he was the stronger of the two between him and Moises Caicedo, in all honesty. And I think he had that aura and that personality quiet personality. He's not the most outgoing of characters, but the confidence he took from winning the World Cup with Argentina and playing a big part in that alongside Lionel Messi, I think took his game to a new level. I think he's had to modify what he does there. It's taken him a little while to really find his stride, but people are talking about him now as a contender for player of the year in the Premier League, and I can understand that. So I think he's a terrific player. And again, do you know what it highlights? It highlights that the difference in recruitment of the two football clubs, because I mentioned Casemiro there. I thought he was dreadful on Wednesday night. Lack of effort. Looks like he hasn't got the legs to get around the pitch anymore. United spent massive money on someone who was only ever going to be a short-term fix, and he had a good first season, but that's quickly evaporated. Liverpool picked out McAllister. They got the deal done early. They actually ended up paying a little bit less than they would have had to had that transaction happen later in the summer. They're just a well-run football club. And you look at Endo in midfield as well. He didn't cost a lot of money. I know you're a big fan of him. He's been an excellent addition. You look at the youth players that are coming through. I think Conor Bradley and Jarrell Quansah have been excellent considering they were playing in League One last season. So they're just a football club heading in the right direction. And actually, from a Liverpool perspective, we keep talking about being Jurgen Klopp's last season. I don't think that's necessarily going to be as big a headache as it may have been, because the structure under Michael Edwards will just be a seamless transition taking over.
Well, let's hear from Jurgen Klopp himself, because I spoke to him after the game about the importance of Alexis McAllister, and he waxed lyrical about him.
I'm afraid my English is not good enough to exactly say it, but we had periods where we had to play without him and did well as well. I'm really happy that Curtis is back. Mm-hmm. If there's a similar profile, then it's probably Curtis, or that he can demand the rhythm and stuff like this. Yes, we need that. And so that's really good. I think stating the obvious, it would be to say that Alexis McAllister is a pretty good player. and we are really happy that we signed him, that he came in, that he bought into the project as much as he did, that he loves the club as much as he did. I just saw his father after the game, who said thank you. I said gracias, because obviously it all started somewhere in Argentina, but it's a fit, a real fit, and I'm really happy that he could score that goal and have that kind of impact to the goals he scores. It's not too many, but when, then there are proper goals.
He started talking about his dad. He saw his dad last night. I don't know what the clip is, but he said to me, I bumped into his dad just now and I said, thank you. You know, you made him brilliantly in Argentina and now, you know. But one of the things he said there was when he first joined up, he got the project immediately and worked hard to fit into the system. That was.
I'm a massive fan, by the way.
He's just a really good lad. He's a good lad.
I thought it was really interesting when Jurgen Klopp was obviously very fond of Alexis McAllister and obviously was thanking his dad for producing such a wonderful talent last night because he bumped into his dad at Anfield. He sort of suggested that it's the diligence of McAllister that has helped him fit in so well, Scott. That's the kind of character that you need in a team, a successful team. Could he be the PFA player of the year?
Oof, I tell you what, there's a few candidates for that, but I think when it comes to throwing out awards, you have to wait to the very end. I noticed that in the game of Chelsea Manchester United that Alejandro Garnacho got the man of the match. I mean, wait to the end, or as close to the end as you possibly can before you're doing it. I think it's the same for the principle for the season. But I think absolutely, I've always been a massive fan of McAllister. And I said from the start of the season, when he was asked to play the number six, where Endo was maybe injured and there was a few sort of, he was having to drop in and play that role. He's almost playing with the handbrake on, because this is not his role, but he's that clever enough to do it because of his football intelligence. He was Argentina's second best player in the World Cup. He knows how to play in big games. He's not fazed by any situations. And it is one of that quiet confidence that, you know, he's not your thumping your chest, but you know, you look alongside him in the tunnel as you're about to go out to big games, you're pleased and you're really glad that he's in your side. So I'm sure all Liverpool fans should be thanking McAllister's dad for producing him, because he's an incredible talent, an incredible player.
I think Ali McCoist, who was on commentary for the TV, did change his mind when Cole Palmer scored the second goal and went, I've changed my mind. I'm changing my mind. There's your man of the match.
He had to, Ali. I saw him afterwards, actually. We had a good chat and that. But, you know, unfair to ask him at that particular point, especially in a game like that. But my point is made.
Yeah. Let's move on to Saturday lunchtime, live on TalkSport, 12:30. It's Crystal Palace against Manchester City. Manchester City cruising in midweek to a win over Aston Villa. Although one of the things about Liverpool and Manchester City, which is a common theme, is that they don't really seem to keep that many clean sheets. They're always vulnerable to a goal. Does that give Arsenal the advantage in the title race, Crook?
Yeah, I think it does. It was something I flagged up a few weeks ago that, in my opinion, they've got the best centre-back pairing in the league. They've probably got the best defensive unit in the league. And I know you are a big NFL fan, and obviously they say over there in the States that defence wins championships. And I put that to Mikel Arteta, actually, after the game at the Etihad, and he had a wry smile on his face. He knows that they're a very difficult team to score against, which isn't necessarily the case, certainly with Liverpool and, to a lesser extent, Manchester City. I think they do well to concede in this game, City. I've got to say, I watched Palace at Bournemouth in midweek. They were so toothless up front that I feel a bit sorry for Eze, because with Elise injured, he's sort of taking on that Wilfred Zaha role of almost trying to carry the entire attack on his own. They were relatively well organised. I think you expect that from an Oliver Glasner side, but I'm not convinced they're that much different than they were under Roy Hodgson, to be honest. So I think this should be quite straightforward for Man City.
Another PFA contender, Phil Foden, hat-trick in midweek. 21 goals this season for him now. 14 Premier League goals. He was 66-1 to win the Player of the Year on Boxing Day. He's now the outright favourite. And it's not just his goal scoring, is it? I mean, he is almost running the shop for Manchester City this season. And in a season where Kevin De Bruyne's influence has waned because of injuries, and actually even in the big game on Sunday, didn't have a great influence on the outcome, Phil Foden has stepped up.
Yeah, look, I think that's credit to Arsenal as to how they played. And I agree with Crookie from a defensive point of view that they're arguably the best team in Europe. What was interesting for me, and I watched the first half of the Arsenal-Luton game and then watched the whole of the City-Villa game, was the way that, yes, Arsenal score goals. Yes, they don't concede many. Yes, they've got the best goal difference. But still, in a game where you need to find a way to win, you cannot count City out. And at halftime, just before halftime, it looked tight. I think that 2-1 goal that, Zaniolo must be kicking himself as to moving out the wall. But it was interesting for me that Foden played in a central position. And we're all saying, or a lot of people are saying for England, that he can play in a central position. I still think, and I do understand where Gareth's coming from, that City have all the possession. And therefore, they're on the front foot all the time. But I think Foden showed that he can play in that position. And, even that goal where he's got the ball, it looks like, or he feels he's fouled. He gets up, he gets it back, and he sticks it in a top corner and says, basically, have some of that. I loved it. I loved it. It was brilliant. And yeah, look, I'm with you, Sam, for that game. I can't see Palace. I know what you're saying about City not keeping clean sheets. I can't see anything other than a reasonably comfortable win here for City.
Yeah, they don't concede too many goals. They keep it tight, under 2.5 goals in, I think, the last four games against Manchester City at home. So they'll probably lose 2-3-0 or something like that, and then probably go home relatively satisfied that they didn't get whacked. But I don't know, Crystal Palace, it just feels like, maybe they're just preparing for next season now, or just trying to get sort of sorted for next season, because their season is pretty much over. They seem very Roy Hodgson-y. I wonder whether or not we should reserve judgment until the summer on him. With Manchester City, with Liverpool, with Arsenal, and with the idea of the title race sort of hotting up now, interestingly, the way teams change things from the bench, and we talk a lot about the fact that Manchester City have got, on paper, the best squad, right? So you look at them and you look at the depth that they have. But actually, it's Liverpool who influence games so much more from the bench. So when they need to change things, or when they turn things from a difficult situation into a winning situation, the most goals in Europe's top five leagues that have come from substitutes, either from assists or from goals themselves, the goal involvements, have come from Liverpool. They've got 49 goal involvements from substitutes this season. Manchester City aren't even in the top five. Atletico Madrid 32, Leverkusen 30, 26 Aston Villa, actually, who are in action against Brentford on TalkSport 2 this weekend, and Cagliari 26, but Liverpool 47, head and shoulders above everybody else. And that shows you the importance of a squad, I think. And I think maybe if Pep Guardiola's got any complaints, it's that maybe that hasn't happened enough for him this season, Crook.
And to put that into context, I think Manchester United have only scored 43 goals as a team. So you're telling me that Liverpool's subs bench have contributed more goals than Manchester United have managed. So that is another depressing stat heading into the weekend. I think it's a really good point. And it was a bold call, wasn't it, actually, in midweek to take off Mo Salah when they were chasing the game. That raised a few eyebrows, but it paid off because Gakpo came on and was excellent. You look at Man City, though. They dismantled Aston Villa, the fourth best team in the league, without De Bruyne and without Haaland. And I'm not sure that Arsenal or City or Liverpool could leave out arguably their two best players. You know, could Arsenal leave out Bukayo Saka and William Saliba, or Saka and Odegaard, and thrash Aston Villa? I'm not sure they could.
Interesting. I wonder whether or not Pep Guardiola has been listening to Roy Keane, who told him that Erling Haaland was a League Two player. He didn't actually say it like that. And I think there was a lot of controversy and then sort of sparked by what Pep's response was to that. But actually, Roy was just basically saying that some of the stuff he does, you just sit there thinking to yourself, How on earth? And then he pops up and scores a vital goal. And you can't complain with the fact that the guy's got 29 goals. This season, Arsenal could find themselves behind Manchester City by the time this one kicks off when they go to Brighton at the weekend. Arteta did make 5 changes during that game against Luton in midweek. And they were still very good. They were completely in command of it. Probably could have won it by more. I suspect, Scott, that he will revert to his full strength team, even though the Bayern game is just around the corner.
Yeah, look, I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? Because you've got, for both Manchester City and for Arsenal, you know, massive games in the Champions League where you cannot afford to not be at it from the very first minute of the first leg. But the bottom line is, Arsenal are very, very much in this title race. And no team can afford to drop too many points. I think every team has to maybe win all of them bar one and draw the other one. I think if anyone drops more than 2 or 3 points, then they're going to fall away. I do think one team will probably fall away, although I don't know who it would be, to going up to the very last game of the season. But I do think we will go into the last game of the season still not with the Premier League decided, which is ultimately what we want. Look, Arsenal, I just think when you're the machine that they are right now and they're able to blank out Manchester City, let's face it, it didn't go completely on the attack. They were reasonably comfortable, well, more than comfortable against Luton. This, on paper at least, despite Brighton not being in good form, it's a tough one. And it's one of those that you're looking to say, okay, Brighton may be not in the greatest of form over the last few months, but they are capable of hurting everyone. So I think it's one of those where Arteta can't afford to make too many changes and say, or can't afford not to pick his best side and say, look, we'll make changes if we have to, because, you know, Arsenal players don't affect games in the way that Liverpool players do. So absolutely, he'll go strong from the start.
Everton-Burnley, we'll talk about that in a little bit. It's a huge, huge game at the bottom of the table. We'll talk about Ange and Tottenham too. Have got Nottingham Forest on Sunday night and Brentford's change of approach because they've gone a bit more defensive. We'll discuss that in just a second. But Emil Smith-Rowe played for only the third start in the Premier League this season when he was one of those changes that were made in that Luton game. He looked brilliant on his return. He was excellent. He was part of that first goal. He helped set up the second goal. He's had a very high contribution level to that match. He was given an opportunity. And Mikel Arteta said in the press conference before the game, you know, we've got a lot of players that are chomping at the bit to play minutes and haven't been given the opportunity. But it only takes a second to make history. And when you get your opportunity, you have to grab it. And this time, and it has been a bit of a criticism that, you know, he hasn't always been perfect away from the pitch. When you, and that's just talking about the way he sort of, I think it's his refueling problems. I think he's got, he eats a lot of sweets and fizzy drinks, or he did do at one stage, which is what a big complaint from Mikel Arteta. When he was given his opportunity this week, he grasped it with two hands, didn't he?
Yeah, I thought Reece Nelson did well as well, actually, probably in a similar bracket to Smith Rowe. I think he'll probably move on at the end of the season. I think Brighton are one of the clubs keen on signing him. It's had a funny couple of years, isn't he, Smith Rowe? Because obviously Arsenal fans absolutely adore him. He's come through the academy. He's got his own song. You thought that he was going to be part of the furniture, but he's really struggled for various reasons to force his way into the team. Had an opportunity to move on in January. West Ham were very keen to sign him. He didn't particularly want to go. Arsenal didn't want to lose him because I think Mikel Arteta knew that he'd need the squad as we got deeper into the run-in. But where does he go in the summer? Is he realistically going to force his way into that Arsenal midfield, or a chance is still going to be at a premium? And this is someone, I think if he'd been playing regularly over the last couple of years, we might be talking about in terms of the European Championship squad with England. We're obviously not talking in those terms because he's not played enough football. So I think he's got a big decision to make. Based on the performance that we saw in midweek, there's going to be an awful lot of Premier League clubs who would like to sign him, that's for sure.
Brighton involved in a pretty uneventful draw in midweek with Brentford. So many stories at the moment about the future of their manager, Roberto De Zerbi. I spoke to Paul Barber, the chief executive of Brighton, in midweek. And this is what he said when we discussed De Zerbi's future.
I mean, we have to plan for every eventuality. And, you know, Roberto's under contract for a couple more years. We enjoy working with him. We know he enjoys working with us and inside the club. He's ambitious. He's highly talented. He'll be sought after. We have to be ready and cognizant of an approach at any time. But that's the same, as I said before, for our best players and our best staff in all areas of the club. And, you know, the trick for us is actually having a succession plan in place to make sure if there is a move, if there is a change, then we're able to be ready for it and we're able to carry on without any kind of interruption to the way we work or any kind of damage to our momentum.
I think they're pretty confident that Roberto De Zerbi is going to be their manager next season. And I thought Paul Barber handled this situation really well, because Roberto De Zerbi has been agent provocateur. He has been poking the bear. He has been standing in front of press conferences suggesting that the club need to do this, the club need to do that. They haven't done this, they haven't done that. He has sort of almost challenged. He's thrown the gauntlet down to Tony Bloom. And Paul Barber has he just sort of said, you know, it's my job to communicate with Roberto and manage his expectations. He's obviously a combustible character, a demanding character, Scott. But the way that Brighton are run, and Paul Barber's very key to it, obviously Tony Bloom does a hell of a lot and should get a lot of the credit. But the way that Brighton are run sort of lends itself to be able to not overreact to this situation. Because some owners, some chief executives would look at the way that he speaks in a press conference, their ego would be pricked by it, and they'd think it was a challenge to them, they'd get annoyed, they'd fall out, and this relationship would be over. But the way that they manage it is key to greater success, isn't it?
No, absolutely. You know, for them, business comes first. And in Tony Bloom, as we've said before, he's the genius and the reason why players have come and gone that have been, you know, from 4 million to 100 million. And Paul Barber, I listened to the interview that you did with him. He's just so calm, isn't he? He doesn't get riled. And I think it's almost the perfect yin and yang. I mean, I like De Zerbi. We spoke on the pod earlier in the week with Crookie. And yes, he shouldn't be coming out and saying what he's saying, but he is this combustible character. So what are you going to do? You've got to deal with that. And let's face it, he is a very good manager and he wants to take Brighton to the top four, not just the top eight. I heard Paul Barber sort of, you know, saying that he says that. So it's a great combination. And as long as he keeps him calm, then I don't see a problem. What he also says is, well, we always think we know who the successor could be. So if he does go, then we'll just move on and we'll go to the next person.
Absolutely. That's the title race sorted. Let's talk about the race for the Champions League football. As Aston Villa entertain Brentford, it's live this weekend on TalkSport 2.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. There's a lot more to those 90 minutes than what goes down on the pitch. With the latest odds, form guides and expert opinions, you'll know the score with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org. T's and C's apply.
Diaby's darting through here, angle against him in the area, shoots, runs it in! It's four for Aston Villa!
I can't play against the best teams, the best coaches, the best player. I am really happy to get this challenge.
All-time whistle's gone at the Etihad. Villa lick their wounds and go again against Brentford as they look to keep hold of fourth place. Manchester City 4, Aston Villa 1.
Brentford 0, Brighton 0. I'm not going to lie to you, this was far from a classic.
I think we are on an unbeaten run. Two games, 2 points.
Baptiste with a cross, and the header is in! They've got one back! Christopher Ayer gives Brentford hope!
Well, we say the race for the Champions League. I suppose if that fifth place is secured for England, then the race is all but over because of the gap between Spurs and Manchester United. But did Aston Villa's thrashing midweek show us the size of the gap between the top three sides in the league and the rest? They're the best. They're the best of the rest, Aston Villa, at this moment in time. But I just wonder what it means going forward for next season as well, Crook, because Manchester United will not be as bad next season as they are this season.
Is that a promise?
I can... No, not really. I was just about to say, and I can... I think Chelsea...
What, say about Chelsea bad. As well.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, and I was, oh, maybe they will be, I don't know. But there will be challenges from other teams, won't there, next season for Aston Villa to deal with. And if they're in the Champions League, obviously, as we've seen with Newcastle, that has added problems. That comes with added problems, congestion, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I think this is their moment in the sunshine, really. And Tottenham, to a certain extent. Obviously, Ange Postecoglou's got a lot of praise. I'm still not convinced Spurs are actually that good, to be honest. The number of times they fall behind and have to win it in the second half, particularly at home. And they've scored a first-half goal at home in 7 matches now. But they've taken advantage of the fact that United and Chelsea, who had that clown off in midweek, have been so poor.
What about Brentford? I suppose they'll be safe because the other teams at the bottom of the table were just so not competitive enough, really. And everyone being docked points. How concerned should fans be about next season, bearing in mind that Ivan Toney is likely to be gone, Scott?
Yeah, do you know what? It's a really good question. I did the Brentford United game and he was unplayable, or certainly United couldn't play against him. You know, he was that good. It's a tough one, isn't it? Because he's come in, obviously you're going to get some money for him. Again, it's about recruitment. It looks like he will be going. He's got 1 year left in his contract. So how much can you get for him? I think it is worrying because I looked at that Brentford side in that isolated game. And you would say at the worst, they're a mid-table side. But going into that game, they'd lost 14 of their previous 18.
Yeah.
You know, so clearly there's a massive problem there. And maybe a little rebuild that needs to be done. So it'd be fascinating to see what Thomas Frank does with that. Yeah, absolutely. I think if Tony's gone, I think it's all about recruitment. Because you look at them at the moment, and we've said from the very start of the season, with the teams coming up, they'd probably struggle a little bit. And then you've got points deductions with Forest and Everton. This is a season where you'd probably be okay. Next season, I'm not sure that's the case.
Interesting that they've changed their style a little bit, Brentford, over the last couple of games. They've gone to a more pragmatic, more defensive style to try and sort of stem the flow of goals. They were conceding far too many goals. And I spoke to Thomas Frank before the international break, and he sort of, he was quite honest about it. He said, look, yeah, we definitely have to improve in this area, there's no doubt. And they have. They've just been a little bit more handbrake on, which has allowed them to just stem the flow a little bit. You know, a draw in midweek against Brighton at home, good result, actually. You know, the 1-1 against Manchester United, let's be honest, they were the better team in that game. They should have won that match. Mm. So, you know, just signs that he's sort of adjusted it slightly and improving them as they go along. They've got Aston Villa this week, who could be without Ollie Watkins. He missed the game. I mean, Emery said he could feature this weekend, but it's a bit up in the air. They certainly missed him, and they would miss him because he's been absolutely terrific this campaign. Tottenham Hotspur take on Nottingham Forest. This is live on TalkSport on Sunday night at 6 p.m. Yes, Sunday night at 6 p.m. It's because of tube strikes that were planned and now have been cancelled. Spurs held away at West Ham. I was at that game on Tuesday night. Big Ange, well, he seemed sort of happy enough. He was pretty talkative in the game afterwards. What are you laughing at? Why are you laughing?
He's never happy, is he? I mean, you watch him on the sidelines. I was watching him during the commentary game against Luton last week. They get that late winner. Almost no reaction.
Yes, but you know,
I don't think he'd be great fun at a dinner party.
He has talked about that, actually. And he said, in the build-up to the West Ham game, what is the point of me going absolutely mad on the sidelines? What is the benefit of it? He goes, I'm jumping around inside, but actually my job is to bring calmness and make sensible decisions in those moments. It's not for me to go running up and down the touchline just trying to get in front of the cameras and making myself look good.
Maybe you could give that advice to Mauricio Pochettino. I mean, did Chelsea win the Champions League on Wednesday night, by the way?
Oh, sour grapes.
I was actually in the press conference post-match, and a question was asked, you know, do you think that, you know, the way you were at the end of the game, that's what Chelsea fans want, and that there'd be more of a connection? And his answer, and he went on for quite some time, and he was quite passionate about it. He said, I'm not a clown. He said, I'm not there to jump up and down and run up and down. And, you know, so he gave a very similar answer to what Big Ange is saying. Look, you know, we can only guess what it'd be like. And we see the fans when you score a late winner, you would imagine you can't control your emotions. But these guys can. Obviously, Pochettino, you know, didn't with the game against Manchester United, but generally does. He feels it's better for the players to look across and see someone who's still very much in control and not losing control. It's an interesting dynamic.
And that is, you know, everyone reacts differently because people have, funnily enough, different personalities and are made up slightly differently, Scott, Crookie. I know that you expect everybody to react like you do. Otherwise, they're not worth the paper they're written on. But he's just a different kind of guy. I will confirm, though, that I did a nearly 5-minute interview with Ange on Tuesday night. And I don't think we made eye contact once. So it's not.
why haven't they sorted that out? They've got a comms team. Why hasn't somebody said to him, it's a much better look for you if you just look at the interviewer in the eye?
Right. OK. Kyungmin Son urged the club to make Timo Werner's signing permanent in midweek. I think they probably will, won't they? It's quite a bargain deal. It's only £15-16 million, isn't it? I think he's actually made a really good contribution. I know that he doesn't finish many chances. I think he's got 2 goals in 10 games. But actually, his effectiveness on that left-hand side has been really important. He's got great rapidity. His speed is superb. He opens up the play by being that outlet on that left-hand side. I actually think he's done quite well.
No, I agree, and I think it is an easy deal to do, as you say, because I spoke to Timo Werner a good few weeks back now, and he made it pretty clear that he'd like to make the move permanent. What do you get for £15 million in the modern transfer market? Obviously, yeah, he's a good character, popular with his teammates. Yeah, I think it's a no-brainer, to be honest. I'd be surprised if Spurs don't pull that cord.
No, they have to, because they need extra players because they'll be playing European football next season anyway. So they're going to need a bigger squad, and he's never going to kick off. He's just never going to kick off. So if he's not playing, he'll still be a great character around the place. He's an absolutely lovely human being. So, you know, I know that people sort of take the mickey out because he misses his chance or whatever, but he's such a nice bloke. You can't help but want good things for him. A huge win for Forest in midweek. Lifts them out of the bottom three. Gibbs White, what a player he is, by the way, Scott. I mean, I don't want to sell other clubs' players, but someone should be buying him. Chelsea are definitely going to offer £100 million quid for him at some stage, aren't they?
Probably. Even though they can't, from PSR reasons. Yeah, look, he's a massive talent, isn't he? And he went from Wolves for good money. But you were kind of waiting. I wouldn't necessarily say it's been a slow burner, but now he is one of, if not the key player for Forest, and will be the reason why Forest, I think, will stay up. And I think that was a massive win. It was a massive statement against the Fulham side that can blow hot and cold, but actually can get some very good results, as we saw against Spurs. So that was massive, with teams around them not winning, to them to get all 3 points. and Gibbs White playing a major part in it.
On to the Daishi Derby, a huge relegation six-pointer at Goodison Park. There are games, and then there is this. Yes, Everton against Burnley. Now, some people might be sitting there thinking, so this is not the biggest game of the weekend. Oh, it could be. Because Burnley could end up giving themselves a massive chance of staying up, should they beat Everton. And they've started to put some results together. Four without defeat. They've looked a little bit more competitive lately. But, Scott, have they left it too late?
I think probably we'll look back and say yes. But at least they are making a fist of it. I think it is too little too late. You know, the win against Brentford, I think, was really important. And I think this is a massive game for both teams. I honestly hear what you're saying about this being one of the big games of the weekend. Because I think with Everton, you know, that you look about their winless run as well. And on paper, the fans were expecting, okay, well, this is it. This is the one. But it won't be easy in the way that company has made his team more difficult to beat. I think Everton have, it's a must win for both. It's quite simple. You know, I think if Everton don't win this, and certainly if they lose it, the fallout from that, as well as obviously another game without the win, I think will be massive and difficult to deal with from a playing point of view. If Burnley don't, then yes, they could be just too far away. So I think it's a massive game for both. I really do.
Really huge. 23-game goal drought ended by Dominic Calvert-Lewin. Could it be the turning spot that he scored that goal in midweek from the spot, enough to kick him into form? Because I mentioned, I've done the analysis on TalkSport before, if you look at the statistics about his expected goals tally over the course of the season, it was actually higher than it was in the season that he'd scored 16 goals for Carlo Ancelotti. So it was just that final moment of finishing that has been letting him down this season.
Yeah, he did his best to miss the penalty, didn't he? The goalkeeper got a big hand on it, but confidence-wise, it'll obviously do him the world of good.
He's so negative. Be nice. What's the matter with you? Well, be nice. Why can't you just give the guy a bit of a break? He hasn't scored a goal since October, and then you have to give him stick about the fact that he was under pressure for the penalty. Crikey. Have you ever taken a penalty in those circumstances? If I remember rightly, you turned down the opportunity to take a penalty in the TalkSport Trophy last year.
My team got mugged, so I'm not in love with football this morning. Apologies. But listen, obviously, it's a big moment for Calvert-Lewin. Any striker on that kind of drought, it's just a relief when the ball hits the back of the net. And actually, if he can come up with a few goals between now and the end of the run-in, Everton will be fine because defensively, they're still pretty solid. They don't concede too many goals. They were competitive against Newcastle. It is 13 games without a win now. So Sean Dyche will see this as a massive opportunity at home against his former club to end that run. And I think they'll all be fine. You know, Luton, the injuries have done for them, I think. Was it 10 games without a win now for Rob Edwards' side? Unless Everton get hit with a massive points deduction, and we should find out about that by the close of play on Monday, by the way. I think the three teams that came up last season will go down. And actually, you were talking about Brentford in terms of next season. I think all of those teams who are sort of just flirting with the dotted line should be a little bit concerned because I just can't see any way that the teams coming up from the second tier, I think one of them will be Leeds. I'd love the other to be Ipswich. And then you look at Leicester, Southampton, maybe via the playoffs. They'll all be more competitive, much more competitive than these three have been this season. I've got no doubt about that already.
Interestingly, the Everton question is quite a big one, isn't it? Because financially, they've got a massive problem. They've got to replay a loan by the middle of next week. If they don't do that, there is every chance that Farhad Moshiri will lose control of the football club. 777 Partners haven't completed the takeover. They have been the subject of a couple of court rulings in the United States of America where state governments have advised certain other banks not to increase their exposure to 7-7 Partners. So the flow of money has just stemmed, has stopped flowing to them, which is a bit of an issue. And I wonder whether or not, and I'm not being outlandish here or wanting to be scaremongering, but I wonder whether or not, Crook, there is any chance here that Everton might, or there is a scare here, is there a fear that there remains the possibility of it between now and the end of the season, Everton could find themselves going into administration.
Well, that will be terminal because that comes with an automatic hefty points deduction. Is it 9 points, the penalty for
9 points,
administration? Yeah. I mean, that would... There's no coming back from that. And actually, you talk about 777. We've always been a bit sceptical about their ability to complete this takeover to provide proof of funds. There's a story today, Paul Brown, formerly the Daily Star, big Everton fan, he's been all over this. A budget airline they own in Canada is on the brink of going bankrupt. That wouldn't fill me with confidence that they're the right partners to come forward. And I do think Everton fans need to be a bit careful because they're so desperate to get shot of Farhad Moshiri. They were seemingly willing just to welcome in this potential new company without actually doing due diligence. And sometimes it is better the devil you know. I feel for Everton because ultimately they overspent when they were trying to be too ambitious under the likes of Ronald Koeman and Carlo Ancelotti. They're committed to building what looks like a fantastic new stadium, but at what cost?
Mm. Yeah, well, listen, the other problem is that although the off-the-field problems have been a big issue, actually on the field, they're escaping a little bit of scrutiny, I think, because they're on a club record run of 13 games without a win. Now, in any other circumstances, that would be the biggest news surrounding Everton. I know that they've played okay. I know that they've missed a lot of big chances. I know that they probably deserve more points than they've got, Scott. However, they haven't won a football match in the Premier League since December the 16th. It's nearly the middle of April. It's the first weekend in April. That can't go on forever.
No. If it does go to the end of the season, then they're down. Quite simple. And that's why I think this game at the weekend is absolutely massive, because it's against a team that are down there. It's your direct rival. You're playing at home. The fans expect you have to find a way to win. I do feel for Sean, because I think they have been playing
well. I think we all do, because I think he's a good guy and he's trying to keep the temperature out of the sort of any protest. He's got the fans on side. I think they quite like him.
Yeah,
but he says things like, and it was interesting at the weekend, he said it wasn't that long ago we were putting wins together and keeping clean sheets. It actually is quite a long time ago now, Sean.
It's a bit like Ten Hag saying, trust the process, we're doing really well at the moment. But what do you expect him to say? Yeah, we're in
street. He can do. I mean, it's not all his fault, is it?
He's not
with one hand tied behind his back. I think we know that.
Absolutely. So, you know, he's fighting fires and he off the field, and he's dealing with trying to protect the players on the field. On the field, they're creating chances, but just not scoring. I mean, he was never a centre forward himself anyway. So, you know, he can't jump onto the pitch and score the goals.
Scored a mean penalty in the FA Cup semi-final though, didn't he?
Yeah, that's right. Nearly played against him in the final.
Nearly.
I think he's doing a really good job, but you're right. The stats suggest that if a manager does that, then he's in trouble for his job. But I think we all know what's going on. You've just described what's going on behind the scenes, bubbling around. That actually, if you watch the games, it's not a sackable offence what he's going through. But they need to find a way to win, and they need to win this weekend.
And this weekend is going to be an absolutely belting football weekend, because we got Crystal Palace, Manchester City live at 12:30 on Saturday. At the same time, the Old Farm, Norwich Ipswich on TalkSport 2. Wow, the Championship's been brilliant as well, hasn't it? Game Day Live, Adrian Durham takes you round the grounds at 2:30. We've got Aston Villa Brentford on TalkSport 2 live. It's not on UK TV anywhere, so you can tune into TalkSport 2. And listen to that. Sunday, I'll be at Old Trafford with my old mate. I haven't seen him for a couple of weeks. He can't wait to see me. He's coming around my house on Saturday night. We're going to have a Chinese, watch match of the day, get up together the next morning and go to Old Trafford and watch that game live at 1:30. He's excited, aren't you? You excited? You excited?
I'm more excited to see you, believe it or not, than I am to go to Old Trafford.
Wow.
Sam, be careful. Don't let him bring you down, by the way, Sam, because he is going to be so doom and gloom the night before
game. I won't. Don't you worry. I'll make sure that I'm in tip-top form. Peterborough against Wickham in the Bristol Street Motors Trophy is at Wembley on Saturday, Sunday as well. We'll keep you in touch with that. And Tottenham Forest is live and exclusive to National Radio, 6 o'clock on Sunday night. We will be back Sunday night, Monday morning. We're recording the podcast from Hotel Football, aren't we? That's going to be on YouTube as well. So we'll see you then. We look forward to it. Scott, thank you very much. Nice to see you again in midweek, by the way.
Great to see you back, Sam. We've missed you.
Oh, well, I've missed you too. And Crook, I'll see you on Saturday night. Bring your cash for the Chinese, fella. Right, we'll see you soon.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. The latest odds? We set them. Form guides? We've got them. Expert opinions? We share them. The best fans in the world deserve the best. Be match day ready before the whistle blows with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. Be gambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.